Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the assault continues on free and fair elections by the Texas legislature. Many citizen complaints to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality could go ignored in the future. And why Texas could be making big bucks in the new green economy, but state leaders are holding it back. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Voting in Texas is going to be much more difficult in the future if bills passed by the Republican lawmakers become law. There are proposals to end voting on college campuses, end countywide voting, make voting mistakes a felony, and give the Texas Secretary of State the power to overturn election results. To explain what is happening with these Republican-backed bills and how they could impact democracy in Texas, I'm joined by Katya Escherman, Voting Rights Program Manager for Common Cause Texas.
It's a really worrying sign that the Texas Senate pretty late last night just voted to eliminate the countywide polling place program on a party line vote. It will now move to the House. We're hopeful that lawmakers will continue to see the benefits in countywide polling and continue to enable this program. But what we saw in the debate about countywide polling is a lot of misinformation being constructed about countywide polling being insecure, being ineffective, being bad for election administration, citing problems that happened in elections that aren't attributed to countywide polling. What we actually know is that during early voting, every county uses countywide voting, and it is a process where it is largely safe, largely effective, and largely necessary for voters that are working, are going to school, are taking their kids to school, and might have, a resource or more time to go vote. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of debate happen about countywide polling, and it's been safe and secure and effective. And so it's not just what we're looking at in the 2022 election with new larger urban counties joining the program, but over 80% of Texas voters have been using this for the past few cycles. And it would be really damaging to the knowledge that voters have when going to the polls to not be able to have this on an election day.
So just to review what life was like before we had countywide polling, on election day, you were required to go to a specific place to go vote. If you didn't know where that place was, it could be difficult to go vote. Maybe you went to a place where I always voted at this location, but this time it's not there. And maybe you have to go to two or three different places in order to find your polling spot. That's a lot of time, it's a lot of energy, and it's hassle that some people may not be able to put up with. But when we had countywide polling, you could go to lots of different places and still be eligible to vote on election day. The technology is there now. We can track people. We know who's eligible and who is not. We have voter ID. That's something that we have to have. And so it's very unlikely that people are going to be able to, almost impossible, to impersonate someone else and vote in these locations. And this saves money for the county as well. Well, how could it be more of a security risk to have countywide voting? Because if you have fewer places where more people can go vote, then you can do it in a more secure fashion. So I would like to hear, can you kind of summarize again? What is the argument? What is this? Why end countywide voting?
You know, I don't think there is a good argument, unfortunately. I think the argument that the authors has outlined when laying this out, and that we saw a little bit on the floor last night, is that there's this kind of myth of voter fraud that's happening in Texas that Republican lawmakers are using to erect these new barriers. And unfortunately, that myth is largely disputed, or fortunately for Texas elections, but, you know, unfortunately for the authors, these myths are disputed because we're not seeing that. We're even seeing the, you know, election audit and election integrity audit unit of the Attorney General's office not report this widespread fraud. But what's being construed is the fact that with countywide polling, data might be might not be updated as frequently as it needs to be. So in a hypothetical world, in these lawmakers' minds, someone could vote at one precinct in, you know, a large urban county, and then drive rapidly down the street to another polling location in another precinct in a large urban county, and try to you know, obscure the election results that way. That's not happening. The system has checks in place to prevent that type of duplicated vote. We have, you know, the vote lists and voter rolls are online and updated and maintained by these precincts. And if lawmakers are worried about that, then the option should be investing in our election security and our cyber machine usage, as opposed to banning and creating new barriers for voters through the elimination of countywide voting.
It's interesting that Texas lawmakers are using the fear of voter fraud, which was bolstered by the lies that were told on Fox News. And we know they were lies because of the Dominion lawsuit, which Fox News settled. These lies are having an impact on creating new laws in Texas that make it harder to vote.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, that is a really good timing for, as we're going through this legislative session, the ban on countywide polling, having the first key vote of approval from the Senate, is not the only, you know, bill rooted in this big lie and rooted in, you know, election subversion and voter suppression that we've seen passed by the Senate. Unfortunately, we've seen other bills that are creating problems when they're looking for solutions to this problem that doesn't exist, of this widespread voter fraud. When, you know, we've had election audit units say that that's not a widespread problem. These bills, you know, look to create new felony penalties, look to create election marshals, and, you know, people to look for those types of, you know, issues to prosecute. And so, you know, the elimination of countywide voting didn't have a really clear or persuasive argument as to why that would be necessary. But opponents have been really active in saying that this would actually just create new barriers for voters who would, exactly as you laid out, you know, maybe be used to voting at one location for the past 8-10 years. No longer be able to vote there. And any time you add a new barrier into the system or a new thing that they have to do, voters are very likely to get turned away by those new barriers. And so we're going to see mass disenfranchisement at high numbers from voters that are turned away, that are you know, forced to go through these new steps or forced to find a new polling location, more forced to wait in longer lines because we're seeing a concentration of voters, especially in the urban core and these highly, you know, concentrated parts of a county, that they're all having to vote at that one location only on election day, where it's going to be, you know, a higher turnout than during early voting. So I think, you know, we're seeing that big lie definitely manifest in a anti-voter, anti-access agenda that's passing through the Texas Senate with very little evidence as to why those types of reforms would be necessary, and a lot of evidence as to why those types of policies are actually really dangerous for elections.
Yeah, so another term for that is voter suppression, when you are adopting laws that are intended to reduce voter participation. That is voter suppression. Now there is a bill that would ban voting on college campuses, and that is a direct assault on youth vote.
Yeah.
And does that seem like it's moving forward?
You know, we haven't seen it have a hearing yet, and we're about 38 days left in session. So we're optimistic that lawmakers heard all of the issues that this bill would pose to young voters and maybe opted to not give it a hearing. We'll still, you know, wait the last few months of session to see. But just the fact that it was filed is incredibly concerning to anybody that cares about, the integrity of Texas elections, because an integrity of an election should mean that every eligible voter is able to cast their vote. And what we've seen is when campuses don't have a polling location, or under this bill would be prohibited from having a polling location, there are thousands and tens of thousands of student voters that are eligible, that are registered, that are interested and passionate about voting and about engaging in their democracy and their government, who are being turned away because they don't have car or ready access to transportation, or are working jobs on campus or working generally and also doing school and homework. And so they won't have that time to make it across.
But the complaint was that it was making voting too easy for young people who live on college campus. They were, quote, saying they could just roll out of bed and go vote and then go right back to bed, as if that were a bad thing.
That should be, voting for eligible and registered voters should be easy. It should be accessible. But we've, made a lot of really clear arguments as to why, if we want to invest in Texas elections, if we want to invest in our election integrity, if we want to invest in making sure that Texas elections are safe and secure and equitable and accessible, then there's a lot of reforms that we should be looking at, like online voter registration, like investing in voter outreach and education, and making sure that the 9.6 million voters that are registered in Texas but did not cast a ballot in 2022 have whatever barriers to their participation rectified. But unfortunately, most of those bills have not even gotten a hearing. But what has gotten hearings are these bills rooted in the big lie and rooted in misinformation, and would be very damaging to Texas elections.
Giving the Secretary of State, which is an appointed position by the governor, the ability to overturn elections based upon if there's a shortage of ballots and things like that. What is happening with the with this?
Yeah, we've been looking at these types of bills, and there's a handful moving through the legislature as a state takeover bill. And these are kind of a part of a more covert type of voter suppression that's more recently referred to as election subversion, where they're diluting the power of people's votes. And what these bills would entail, and there's a few of them that would do what you're referring to, is allowing the Secretary of State to remove and in some instances defund or eliminate an election administrator's role or office in a county office, in a county elections office, because of really small, low threshold, potential issues. Being stuck in traffic for an hour and missing the deadline that you need to provide ballots to the central count station, but providing it, 45 minutes or an hour later. These are things that very clearly aren't malicious intent from election administrators or election workers to disrupt the integrity of our elections. We get stuck in I-35 traffic all the time, but under this, these potential rules, that could be grounds for an investigation into that office and potential removal if any one person brought an issue with that administration. So it's definitely concerning. It's definitely an erosion of the checks and balances that are already in place in a lot of these appointed local election offices and local offices, period. Fire chiefs are also an appointed position in a county office. And if there's an issue with their, role in work ethic or job, then the county would vote to remove that official and reappoint, or that the county clerk would be an elected person that could then be unelected and a new person would fill that role. But what we're seeing is that these bills want to put all of that power of removal away from the Texas voters and into the hands of an appointed partisan official of the Secretary of State's office with, very little autonomy in these county offices. And so that's a really dangerous trend that we hope that lawmakers, continue to be wary of and hopefully vote to not pass in the final days of session.
Katja Escherman is the Voting Rights Program Manager for Common Cause Texas. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has been talked about being the Texas version of the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, but that comparison is very generous. While the TCEQ is the environmental agency for the state of Texas, it is known for its refusal to withhold permits for controversial projects, failure to perform air monitoring after Hurricane Harvey, and being lax on chronic polluters. Last year, a coalition of 13 organizations requested a federal review of the TCEQ, alleging that the agency violated civil rights and environmental laws by failing to evaluate how minority and low-income neighborhoods are affected by air pollution from industrial sites. But supporters of the TCEQ have found a way to silence some of its critics by cracking down on repeat complainers about pollution in Texas, while also the TCEQ is undergoing a required sunset review, which happens every 10 years. Martha Piskowski is covering these developments for Inside Climate News.
The Sunset Commission reviewed the agency last year, and so there is some changes that are being made coming out of that process, increasing fines. The daily fine cap was one positive change that advocates had pushed for. But on the whole, the Sunset Bill was pretty modest in its changes to the agency. And I've been reporting on another bill that kind of goes in the opposite direction of what advocates have been seeking.
Right. So let's dig into that. Tell us about this other bill that would penalize people for filing complaints with the TCEQ. I mean, there's more to it, so tell me.
Yeah, so this was a bill, it's Senate Bill 471. It was filed by Republican Drew Springer from North Texas, and it just passed committee this week. There is a substitute to the bill. So the original bill proposed that any residents who made complaints to TCEQ, you know, if there's a refinery or a concrete batch plant, some facility that has air pollution or water pollution near your home, the bill would require if someone has made three complaints about the same facility that don't lead to enforcement action, then there would be a fee to file a complaint. So a few different environmental groups, nonprofits gave testimony against this bill, just saying it would discourage people from contacting TCEQ if there was a problem with pollution at a facility. So the committee substitute removes the fines, but has now changed the language so that TCEQ would not have to investigate complaints under certain criteria. So that includes if the complaint would be covered under other TCEQ activities. So I understood that to mean if there's a routine investigation, TCEQ will just do that instead of doing a separate investigation for the complaint they received. So the bill has changed, but still looks like it'll have some pretty significant impacts for, you know, how people are able to seek help from the TCEQ if they're having issues with pollution.
We have some watchdog groups in Texas who monitor events at fracking sites, at mining places, and they file complaints. They may file numerous complaints in a year. They know what they're talking about. They're watchdogs, and they are an important part of making sure that there is compliance in Texas. Would this silence those people?
Well, the new language in the bill, it says that if a complainant has filed at least five complaints that were not substantiated by TCEQ in the preceding 7 years, TCEQ would not be required to investigate subsequent complaints. So, you know, there are folks who have thermography equipment and are out in the field checking on these facilities. And I do think it's a very real possibility that their complaints to the agency might now just be shelved because, you know, it's a very complex, the enforcement and investigation process is very complex with TCEQ. So, you know, the people I spoke with said, you know, even if there doesn't end up being a violation enforcement action against the company, that doesn't mean nothing valuable came out of that complaint and the investigation. So, with this bill, we stand to lose some of that investigative power of the TCEQ.
So back to when we were talking about the Sunsetting Commission, looking at the TCEQ and doing some updating. But during those hearings, we heard a lot of complaints and even lawmakers admitting that the TCEQ was convoluted. It didn't respond well to many complaints that were filed, and that it needed to do a better job of listening to the community. So we're hearing two very different things coming from the same legislature about the same agency.
Yes, I mean, it's the fact that this bill, which, you know, discourages people engaging with the TCEQ, comes at the same time as the Sunset Review is pretty concerning. But, I mean, if you go back to the previous Sunset Review for TCEQ a little over a decade ago, these same issues have been raised for quite a while about how the agency is not responsive, how its, you know, records and website are difficult to deal with. And we just have seen a lack of, you know, real commitment from the legislature to take on those problems. You know, the TCEQ is also asking for additional funding this year for its staff. There's been a lot of turnover. So, you know, hopefully that funding can help, but a lot of the recommendations, you know, coming out of Sunset just aren't being adopted.
Martha Piskowski is a Texas-based reporter for Inside Climate News. On Thursday, Senator Edward Markey, a Democrat from Massachusetts, and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a Democrat from New York, reintroduced the Green New Deal. This is a sweeping but controversial proposal that seeks to address the problem of climate change by weaning the nation off of fossil fuels while creating millions of good-paying jobs in the clean energy industry. Texas is certain to benefit from a switch to renewable energy. There is more wind and solar potential in the state than anywhere else in the nation. And these provide good-paying jobs to rural parts of the state that are now being depopulated due to the lack of opportunity. But Texas Republican elected leaders and lawmakers are slowing down the switch to renewable power in Texas. They are passing laws to limit the growth of solar and wind power installations, misleading the public about the reliability of these power sources, and spending billions in state funds to build more natural gas power plants that critics say will do nothing to fix the grid. Christopher Teig writes about this paradox in his article, "Clean Energy is Thriving in Texas, So Why Are State Republicans Trying to Stifle It?" Teig is a reporter for Inside Climate News.
Over the years, Texas has kind of come up over and over again in our reporting. So when I saw that lawmakers there were proposing kind of this whole cache of new bills that aim to, you know, what environmentalists say, you know, stifle renewable growth there and also bolster fossil fuels, it kind of seemed like there was a pattern playing out here, and I decided to write about it.
We have wind and solar being generated, being produced. Texas is a state that has a open energy market. It's easy to build things in Texas if you want to build a new gigafactory for electric cars. So it does seem like there are a lot of positives if you do want to see renewable energy take hold.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, in fact, Tesla, you know, Elon Musk's, you know, leading electric vehicle manufacturer, they moved their headquarters to Texas in 2021 for those exact reasons you just listed. And, you know, there's this international manufacturing company that's also expanding operations over there. The whole South is seeing a boom in proposals to build, you know, factory expansions to make, you know, batteries and other clean energy parts, because there's clearly a lot of public opinion backing it and a lot of sort of business momentum pushing forward the industry.
So you can build a Tesla car in Texas, but you can't actually buy a Tesla car in Texas, the irony.
Yeah.
And so is the opposition to renewable energy, is that ideological? What is driving that?
That's tough to say. You know, part of my story was about how, the environmentalists that track this, there's several groups, and there's sort of environmental law centers that track these kind of bills as well. You know, one of the criticisms that I saw cropping up as I was reporting this was that a lot of the lawmakers who tout, free market idealism, the idea that let the market do its thing and we shouldn't be choosing one industry over another, you know, that should be up to the American consumer. You know, those same lawmakers were pushing these bills that do just that. So we have all of these environmentalists who are essentially calling them hypocrites because this is them not living up to their ideals. So that was interesting to me. And what people do kind of tie in this that makes sense, at least on paper, is that clearly there's an agenda to boost fossil fuels, which has, you know, in terms of a legacy industry, been one of the longest running for Texas, right? So, you know, this brings in hundreds of billions of dollars to the state every year, and the laws that they're introducing kind of reflect that. It's clear, at least from my stance reporting on this, that there is there's at least a goal to protect those profits.
We do know that people in the petroleum industry do write a lot of checks for conservative politicians, Republican politicians in Texas. Is there a connection there? Obviously, you know, this is where the money is. So are you going to protect that?
Sure. So I didn't look specifically into donations and things like that, but reporting in the past has shown plenty of connections between the donations coming from groups like the American Petroleum Institute and oil and gas companies. There's been plenty of reports that show ahead of some of these big decisions, for instance, with West Virginia's Senator Joe Manchin, when he was pushing for things like pipeline environmental review reform, you'd sort of see a spike in donations from these organizations and different companies in the months kind of leading up to those decisions being made. So while I can't sort of definitively say that was playing a role in here, just because I didn't look into that specifically, I do know that there's plenty of evidence that is the case.
Texas having this tension between the market-driven move to a green economy. Yeah, there are some policy decisions that are trying to move that forward, but this is happening whether Biden passes laws and regulations for this or not. I mean, this is happening. And then we have this old establishment industry of petroleum. Is Texas in a position to cash in on both, or could this make Texas a loser?
It's a good question. I'd have a hard time, I think, seeing Texas necessarily losing, just because it does seem that as this is playing out, the state is almost playing both ways, right? It's maybe doubling its bets in both columns. And because, you know, Texas is by far developing the most renewable energy in the nation, more so than California, right? And it's generating the most electricity from it as well because of that. And so, it would be tough to see Republicans there stop that growth. What you could say, though, is that their reluctance to get behind it, and even their sort of active efforts to undermine it, is definitely stifling that growth. It could be more money to be made.
Christopher Teig is a reporter for Inside Climate News. His article is "Clean Energy is Thriving in Texas, So Why Are State Republicans Trying to Stifle It?" That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. And you can download, like, and subscribe to us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.